Wow, one more hour.
The Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Oops, I forgot someone else was going to talk there. So I apologize for that. We have a lot to get to in this hour. Our friend Tim Summer, who is our rock and roll go-to guy from the, well, he writes it at several different outlets. He contributes to the Rock and Roll Globe, but he is a music journalist. He's a former record executive. And then I find out, because he listens to the show on Fridays, maybe even when he's not on, you know, as a guest, but he pointed out in the last hour, we were talking about these competing Hurricane Katrina documentaries that are on Hulu and Netflix. Spike Lee's is on Netflix, that Tim lived in New Orleans during Katrina. I did not know that, so we'll definitely touch on that. I have a couple of musical recommendations this afternoon. Now, look, some of you have noticed this, and it is what it is. I used to feature my own music coming in and out of every segment, my bumper music. I was very proud of it. I picked it out. I selected it myself. It got to be a big headache for the producers. So I was told in no uncertain terms that we're doing things a little differently, and the music is generic. Now, having said that, Sue, I still occasionally, you know, come up with music that I want to share with people, and I'm going to share a couple of my favorite albums right now when we do the segment with Tim coming up.
Nice.
And, you know, he actually, just to kind of tease this a little bit, he is going to ask us a question, you and I. Every once in a while, he likes to flip the script, and it's about classical music, and I think it's a good question. So
okay,
we'll get to that in just a little bit.
I like Mozart.
Man, Beethoven. Well, but yes, but updated stuff too. Yes, yes.
Okay. I'll
let him ask the question. You know, I felt like there was a part of my innocence that was torn down in Chesterfield, at Chesterfield Mall, my youth, because I used to work at the Camelot Music at Chesterfield Mall. There was only one summer I came back from Mizzou, and that was the summer of 1984. I was a freshman in 83 and 84, and I came back home, and I worked at Camelot Music, because at that time I was kind of pointed toward perhaps working in the music industry, and some of my record company guys said, hey, you need retail experience, so I worked at Camelot, and I don't even think they ever let me run the cash register. I was
what?
Just simply, well, here's the deal. Camelot was different from Record Bar and Streetside, because what they focused in on is helping people find the music that they were looking for.
Oh.
So I was wandering the aisles, and when someone would come up and say, hey, can you point me to the latest Julio Iglesias record? And there were like 120 of them. I would find that for them, but I never really had to do, you know,
the
I did the stocking.
Part.
I never did the checkout part, but
right.
I had a lot of fun at Chesterfield Mall for that summer, although I also decided that when you live with your parents after living on your own for 1 year of college and you have to play by mom and dad's rules, that's not so much fun. So I never came back after that. But Michael Steinberg is the guy responsible for tearing my youth and childhood memories away, because he's developing what used to be the Chesterfield Mall as downtown Chesterfield. He's also behind The Factory, which is an amazing music venue. We talked about that with Steve Shankman last week. Michael Steinberg, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
Good afternoon.
We don't really know each other, but there was an era about 10 years ago when I used to ride a bike that every once in a while we were on a bike ride together with the Weinstein brothers and some of the other folks that you know. So that's the only time I ever had any personal interaction with you, and you probably don't even remember that, but thanks for coming on and talking about stuff tonight.
No, I remember the Weinstein brothers and the Gelman brothers and everybody, and we used to ride out Wild Horse, and you know, that was when bike riding was safe and not everybody was using their cell phones and not paying attention.
You know, Michael, it's one of the reasons I got away from it, because I felt I was a serious cyclist for about 10 years. We were talking about the Gateway Cup this weekend, but I started to feel unsafe on the road. So to your point, I get that. Let's talk about The Factory first, because I love the venue. We had Brian Kilmeade come in for an event about 4 months ago, and I had never gone backstage and seen some of the inner workings. And I remember Shankman telling me that you guys were particularly proud, and you should be, of not only the setup for The Factory, the stage and the way it looks, but you wanted to make sure that you took care of the bands and the crews and all these people that work behind the scenes, and you guys did an amazing job, and it has a reputation, I think it's safe to say at this point, of being one of the hottest venues in the country, Michael.
Yeah, it is. We were voted the number one venue for this size in the country, and when we were building it, my goal was to figure out who the customer was. And what I said was that we should build it for the artist, nobody else, the artist. And that's, if we got the artist, then we'd get the paying customers. And we really are proud of that. And everybody who comes to play there, they love our green rooms. They love the load in and load out. We're in, usually, if you go to the Fox or the Stiefel, it's 6 to 8 hours to load in and load out. But at the factory, it's 2 to 3 hours. Plus, we have a lot of amenities for this for the stagehands to go to. So we really are proud of that.
Well, you should be. It looked really cool back there. I know that the crew has showers and everything. And, you know, I think I remember talking about this at the time, and we were in a transition period maybe with venues around the area. And I love seeing, you know, I really do prefer seeing bands in clubs, smaller clubs like the Pageant or even the size of the factory. But I remember kind of thinking out loud, and we talked about this on the air, man, there's a lot of competition. How can this stuff, you know, be spread out with all these venues? And I think it's worked quite well. Obviously, the factory's bigger than the Pageant. You're also, if I remember correctly, one of the goals, and this makes sense, is you have people coming from, well, whether it's, you know, St. Charles County or Wentzville or even Columbia, to come in another 25 minutes to downtown or to U City is not as advantageous as to have something out there in Chesterfield. So geographically, there was something to, you know, the point of this venue as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, you know, what we thought was that a lot of people, you know, we know that a lot of people like to be in West County. And we figured that within West County, that within 20 to 25 minutes drive, we have about 1.1 million or 1.2 million of people that can get to us. And, you know, of course, concerts don't start till 6:30. So that's not during rush hour and things like that. And what we're proud about is we have great ingress egress. We have free parking. And after a show, you know, within 15 to 20 minutes, you're out of the whole parking lot on the highway and to a full interchange.
And you're safe. And I will say, and you're safe too. That I'm going to include that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's number one. You know, the Chesterfield police, we have a deal with them. We usually have 4 to 6 on-duty police officers there. And knock on wood, I'm hitting my head right now. we've had no problems. No problem. You know, our safety record is impeccable, and it's just a great feeling when you walk in. You know, one of the things that people don't realize is we put a better HVAC system in with filters. So our air is circulated in the whole venue 6 to 8 times an hour.
So yeah, that, I did not know that.
Fresh.
Yeah, that's
I know,
interesting.
People don't know that. People don't know why they like it so much. And now, why they're so happy.
Are you involved at all in the booking, or is that just left to other people? Do you ever have any personal, you know, instincts there?
You know, and if they put me in the booking, I don't think we do well. You know, yeah, you know, we all have to stay in our lane, but we have a great booker. His name is Dan Merker. He lives in Nashville. He's from St. Louis. He's managed bands. He's been a roadie. And he knows the St. Louis marketplace. And one of the things we did was we made it an open room. People say, what does that mean? Well, Live Nations could put a show on there. AEG can put a show on there.
Oh, I got you.
Steve Littman can do that. And, you know, we cooperate. We didn't want to be tied to one type of organization. So I am now partners with Gate 52. They run, I want to say, 22, 23 venues in America. And we're going to book 3,500 shows. So there's a whole booking team. From comedians to whatever genre that we're going to see. Like tonight, the OJs are playing.
Oh, that's awesome.
So great.
Yeah, that's great. Look, and for people listening who have not been to the factory, there's still a lot of folks out there that have not, you know, sampled. I know in the Kilmeade night in particular, there were people who had never been there before. And, you know, they're just blown away. Your first impression is awesome. So I love the venue. I'm really a big fan of it, and I'm glad you're doing so well. Let's talk about downtown Chesterfield and ripping down Chesterfield Mall. All the memories of when I was in high school. Basically, in the early 1980s, that's all you could do is go to Chesterfield Mall and to the arcade or something like that, walk around with your friends. That was our entertainment back 40 years ago, Michael.
Oh, I know. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and I watched the Crossroads Mall being built. I worked there. I heard you talk about it. I worked at the spot. And when they tore it down about 10 years ago, it brought back a lot of childhood memories. You'd be amazed by the number of people that stopped me. And I was hearing where you worked at the music store, Camelot.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, or I worked at AMC, or I worked here, or I did this, or I remember the Walkers. And you'd be surprised when we tore the mall down. I bet I got 100 people calling, what are we going to do? We have no place to walk.
And oh, I'm thinking, yeah.
But I said to them, well, we built 17 miles of levees. Come down, come on down to the district and the hub and get onto the levee. We got parking for you down there, so there's a place. And of course, they said, well, what happens when it's too hot or too cold? I said, well, welcome to St. Louis.
Yeah, the mall walkers, they take that stuff seriously. I guess we should have anticipated some of the pushback. So I have not driven by, I've been on Clarkson Road, but I really haven't looked exactly at what the mall area looks like right now. So what does it look like, and where are you in this process of redeveloping it?
Well, we're almost, I'd say we're a week to 2 weeks away from being done with the demolition.
Okay.
And it's taken about 2 to 3 months longer. But one of the things I'm proud of is that we recycled 95% of the materials. I didn't want it to go to landfills. And it took a little longer to do that. So right now, when you drive by, you will see the former Macy's standing, which we're going to redevelop. You're going to see the Dillard's that's going to reopen. And we're going to start the grading, the streets, the lights, the utilities, in about 2 to 3 weeks. We have all our permits, and we're just ready to roll. And it's going to be anywhere from 18 to 24 months, depending on the weather and what we find. And then we're also in the next 12 months. Everybody tells me how bad Clarkson is. We're going to fix Clarkson. I'm not obligated to fix Clarkson for about 4 or 5 years, but it's the right thing to do. And is it going to eliminate the traffic? No, but it's going to make it move faster, have better lanes, and things that people can get in and off, especially at 64. And we have three different exits to the mall. Well, I call it the Parkway East, the Parkway West, and, you know, Olive and Clarkson. So we're really working on trying to make this a focal point. And as I always tell people, it's the third leg of the stool. And I want to make downtown proud. I want to make Clayton. I live in Clayton. I want them to do well. And this is, to me, the third leg. And how do we make this a regional play? That's what I'm looking at.
So what's all, and I remember, you know, hearing about the project and reading about it in the past, but what's all at this point included? Because there's going to be retail, there's going to be condos in office space as well, all of that kind of coming together?
We're going to have 2,400 residential units, condos, apartments, townhomes. We're going to have a couple million square feet of office, and we're going to have about 1 million square feet of retail, excluding the Macy's and the Dillard's. We're going to probably have 20 restaurants, all different kinds. But the signature of this whole project is the 3.5-acre park right in the middle. It's no different than what I tried to do at the Hub. In the district. You know, I want a place for people to gather, to come, have, you know, see things, you know, and have something that's friendly and have something that's a gathering place for West St. Louis.
What's the timetable then for this to all be completed? Obviously, different pieces of the puzzle will be added at certain times, but what's the best guess on all that?
So I've been working on this for 7 years, and I'm going to be 72 shortly. So as my friend said, what's wrong with you? You're going to be in your 80s when it's done. Well, it might be in the 80s. You know, I said, I got a couple of years left. And I'd say, you know, the first part will happen in 2 to 3 years. 3 or 4 projects will come out of the ground. And then about 80 to 90% will be done in the next 4 or 5 years. So it's a 7-8 year project. And I like to go fast, but I like to go slow because I want to make sure we do the right thing. I'm looking at all the details to make sure that we have the right raised tables to slow the traffic down. We have the right roundabouts. We have the right brick. So we're really looking at things to make sure that people enjoy themselves. You know, you come to Clayton, they try to make the sidewalks better, and, you know, the streets were there. But our streets are 12-foot lanes. We have 60-degree parking that are not 8.5 by 18s. They're 9.5 by 20s. And our sidewalks are 16 feet. So you can have double tables, and people can actually walk by them. And we're going to have retail on the floor. All the retail will ring the park. And then we're going to have a beautiful parking garage. And one thing I tell people, and they really can't wrap their head around it, we're not charging for parking. No charge. So there's no meters. It's free parking 24/7.
That should not be underestimated, how important that is. And you mentioned Clayton. That's one big pain in the ass about Clayton. And if you do find a parking spot, you usually get a ticket. That's what I'd say from the past in Clayton. Will there be any kind of music venue at Chesterfield, downtown Chesterfield?
We're not going to have, we might have a club. But, one of the reasons I got involved is I didn't want to compete with have
exactly.
Someone else compete with me.
Right.
So you know, we're going to have a stage. Yes, we'll have a stage, and we'll have outdoor concerts. We'll have movie nights. We'll have nonprofits. You know, like the other day at the Hub, you know, we had 500 riders from the Pedal for the Cause. You know, we'd like, you know, we need to give back to the community. So we let them use the stage, and they had a band, and they had a practice ride. And we're going to have things like that. You know, one of the things that we're going to try to do, and I, you know, I'll say it on the air, is I, you know, I'm going to compete with the Clayton Art Fair. I want the art fair to move out to Chesterfield. You know, I want the farmers markets to move out to Chesterfield. You know, our sidewalks throughout the park are going to be 16 to 20 feet so you can put a tent and people can walk by. So I'm really trying to activate this and think of the best practices. I've gone around the country, no different than when I looked at did the factory. Everybody told me that was a dumb idea. Everybody said, you know nothing about the music business. But you got to remember, the customer is the people that live out here. And the customer is also the people that live 20, 30 miles away.
Right.
We want it to be a place. We want it to be a place for a destination.
Well, you knocked it out of the park with the factory. There is no doubt there. I'm very much looking forward to see what happens with Chesterfield and downtown Chesterfield. And thank you, Michael Saber, for coming on here tonight and sharing some of the good words. And keep us posted on everything, okay? Great to have you on.
Great. Thank you, sir.
Okay, take care. So that's a hell of a project that he's developing. I love the attention to detail. And even, you know, he mentioned something there. I'm going to kind of make a comparison because I go to the Walmart in High Ridge, Sue, and I love my Walmart. You know that?
Yes, I do.
One of the reasons I love Walmart is because they have bigger parking spaces. And
oh, yeah.
They do, because a lot of trucks and stuff like that. But the bigger parking spaces help you get fewer door dings.
That's
so
true.
I approve on that front, if it's only that. So, and, you know, on the mall front, I don't know if you saw this a couple of days ago, and I can say this with confidence. Nordstrom closed at the Galleria. Did you see that?
Yeah.
So they're going to put a Dick's in there or something like that?
Yeah, they are.
If I had all the money that I spent at Nordstrom over the period from like 2008 to the pandemic, I would be well into retirement at this point.
Wow.
Because, like, I think I've told you this before, my routine on Fridays, and this changed a little bit when Alexa came along, but my routine for many years was I would come downtown and do Channel 4 and do a film review on Great Day St. Louis at like 9 o'clock, 9:30 in the morning. And then, you know, the show, when I was on KMOX, wouldn't start until 3, and I didn't always want to go back home. Sometimes I would. But most times I would go to Nordstrom, and I would spend a bunch of money on clothes. And then when Alexa came along 10 years ago, it was, I loved to shop for her. I used to shop for my boys as well. But I'm telling you, man, I had Reese. Reese was my personal shopper dude at Nordstrom.
Oh, my gosh.
And we had a great relationship. And, yeah, now I've gotten to the point where you can see this on display every day in the studio. I don't really give a crap what I look like and what I wear. But there was a period where I liked fashion, and I spent a fair amount of money at Nordstrom. But
wow, you had a shopper. Wow.
Yeah, well, he helped me pick things. I loved Reese. He was great.
I bet he loved you.
There were guys, and I'm not trying to compare myself to professional athletes, but a lot of the athletes would go in there and do the same thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, they're picking out stuff. If their wives aren't with them, they need some help, and that's kind of what I was doing there. All right, we got Tim Sumner coming up. We'll talk music next. All right, we're taking into the weekend here, and it is going to be a beautiful weather weekend in St. Louis. I have not fired up my fire pit in a while. I think tonight is definitely the night for that, with some cooler overnight lows in particular. I'm looking forward to the weekend because I got my son coming in from Chicago. We got the bike races around town. Head down to Lafayette Square if you want to have some fun tonight. I'm going to go down to the Hill and see Jane on Sunday and watch some college football as well. But let's talk a little music. And I have a couple of things I want to point out musically and make recommendations this afternoon, but we love to have conversations with our friend Tim Sumner, music journalist, former record executive. He contributes to the Rock and Roll Globe. He is the guy who signed Hootie and the Blowfish, and he has so much musical knowledge that we enjoy talking music mostly on a Friday afternoon. And then we discover, and I did not know this, that you lived in New Orleans during Katrina?
Yeah, and I'm very struck by this anniversary because it's not that I don't think about New Orleans. I mean, it's a different part of my life, obviously, but it's not that I don't think about New Orleans or Katrina enough, but it would to have been there. I didn't live through it per se in so much as I evacuated the city the day before. And went someplace about an hour north and didn't come back to the city for another 6 weeks, which is about when you were let back in, to have seen a city, then you turn on the TV, you know, you get to where you're evacuating, and you turn on the TV, and you see such an unfamiliar sight. You see the city that you had called home completely underwater. And the thing about Katrina is it was such a profound act of neglect on the part of the people who were supposed to be taking care of people in the city on behalf of the mayor's office. As you probably know, and I assume this is covered in the documentaries, the mayor should have declared a mandatory evacuation 48 hours, 36 hours before the storm hit. As you may or may not know, he did not declare a mandatory evacuation because it was Labor Day weekend. It was a big weekend, a big travel weekend in New Orleans. And he was afraid that if he declared an evacuation and the hurricane missed the city, he would get sued by the hotels. And because of that, thousands of people died. He and the city made no provision to get the poor and indigent, the population of the city that did not own cars, which was a huge part of the city's population.
Right.
He did not make any plan to get those people out of the city. All he said was, you go to the Superdome. That's not a plan.
Well, certainly wasn't a plan then, right? I mean, that turned out to be a bad plan, unfortunately.
And I will tell you that 6 weeks later, I returned to the beautiful street where I once lived and found, to my surprise, that on the street where I lived, which is in a part of the city called Bayou St. John, and in that part of the city, on the street where I had lived, the floodwaters had reached 4.5 feet. My house was raised 5 feet, and it missed the floodwaters entirely. And my house was one of the only houses on the entire block that was untouched.
Wow.
Now, I'm telling this largely, and I don't want to go on and on about this, but I want to tell this story, especially for Sue. I had a cat that I was very, very attached to, and when it was time for myself and my ex-wife to evacuate the city, this is 2 days before, we had a choice. We were going to evacuate to a place about an hour north of the city where there were going to be 7 dogs in this relatively small house. And we thought, or I thought to myself, you know, my cat is not going to want to live in a box where it is terrified
by
because
dogs.
There are 7 other dogs.
Yeah, right.
So, my ex-wife and I made a decision at the time to leave our cat behind. And when the storm hit, we, of course, assumed that we would never see that cat again. Now, Sue and Mark, on our first day back, my ex-wife and I, on our first day back, 6 weeks later, we're cleaning up the house, we're cleaning up the mess around the house, we're digging our way through the garden, no sign of the cat. Second day back, every hour or so, I call out the cat's name. No sign of the cat.
But the cat was an outdoor, like an indoor-outdoor cat?
Yeah, yes, it was. Yes,
okay.
It was.
Okay.
And I will say that before we left, we opened a giant bag of cat food and left it on a counter where it could reach it.
Right.
And cats are not dogs. They won't eat all the food at once. So the second day we're back, every hour or so, I'm walking around the house calling the cat's name. Nothing. Third day back, every hour or so, I'm walking around the house, calling the cat's name, nothing. Fourth day back, I see the cat peeking its head out from underneath the house.
No way.
Wow.
And the cat looks at me, and you know that way cats look at you. The cat looks at me, and that cat goes, go F yourself.
Yeah. No, I believe that. That I believe. Because they have attitudes.
It disappears for another day. It disappears for a whole other day. Finally, on the fifth day, I put out a can of tuna. The cat came back, and the cat's like, Okay, we can begin to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you heard me say earlier, but I adopted a cat that was a Hurricane Katrina rescue.
I did hear that.
Yeah, there was a group here called Felines Forever, and my Maine Coon mix, he was a big, beautiful, beautiful cat, and he passed away about 3 years ago, but we had him all the way from, you know, 2007. It was a little bit after Katrina, but I think I adopted him right around 2006, 2007.
I'm going to say one last thing about Katrina, which I think applies to Katrina. And as I said, remember, of course, that Katrina missed the city of New Orleans. It was not a direct hit. What happened was, is that the levees, which should have been repaired 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years earlier, failed. And this is the thing about Katrina. And I think this is worth remembering in regard to Katrina and in regard to all of the weather-related catastrophes to come. When Mother Nature and our civilization have an argument, Mother Nature will always win.
Certainly seems that way, Tim Sommer. Hang tight. We're going to take a break. We'll get some traffic in here. We'll come back. We'll talk music. So I feel when we have Tim Sommer on as a guest, we never even scratch the surface of the topics that we were supposed to get to because we always kind of diverge into something different. But I wanted to talk to you, Tim, about the Black Keys because I'm a fan of this band. I saw them at the Chaffetz Arena, I think, on their, maybe it was their second tour. I took my son to that show many, many years ago. I've been a fan ever since. But then something kind of weird happened last year. They put a record out like a year and a half ago. And then in a very mysterious way, they canceled their entire tour. They fired their manager and there were some other things that happened. And now they have a new album coming out and they're back and they're touring. But they're also being kind of outspoken about the way that they feel the music industry is a bit unfair to artists right now, right?
The music industry is, and that's correct, and there's a lot written about it, and it's a very interesting subject. The music industry is undeniably unfair to artists, but that's like screaming at clouds. This is the world we live in, and this is, you know, the fact is, what's happening to the Black Keys now, what they're complaining about, and I think they will admit this, is the flowering of seeds planted by their past bad decisions. They overestimated the size of venues they could play, and therefore they had to cancel the tour. Now, all that says is, whether it was their booking agent, whether it was the band, whether it was the former manager, this, that, and the other thing, bad decisions were made. And to a certain degree, they're owning them. But what you can't, and probably you can be outspoken about everything that's gone wrong in the Spotify era. The Spotify era reset, the streaming era, I shouldn't just say Spotify, of course this applies to Apple Music and Tidal and everything else. The streaming era in music reset the economic realities for all bands. You can't get mad at the people who can play that game well, your Taylor Swift's, your Oasis. But at the same point, you just go, this is our new reality. It sucks. It's different than the reality we had in the aughts. I got the word right.
Yeah,
sorry
there you
about
go.
That. It's different than the reality we had in the aughts. It's different than the reality we had in the 1990s. What you do still is, we say, we have fans out there. We honor and love the fact that we have fans. We're going to reach them, which the Black Keys did through these great sort of like listening parties and disco parties they had. That's fantastic. But the fact is, and this is terribly sad, we are not turning back the clock on the new horrifying economic realities created by the streaming era. The streaming era meant that what musicians could formerly sort of take for granted, that if they sold a record, if someone purchased their music, if someone wanted to listen to their music, the artist would then get paid for that privilege. We could take that for granted up until about 2010, 2008 or so. After that, that reality is gone, the door is shut, never to be retrieved. And that's just what we have to deal with. Now, the only way, and I'm personally surprised this has never happened, the only way mark that could ever change. And to be honest, people like the Black Keys should be pointing fingers where they need to be pointed, is if an artist with the power of Taylor Swift or, say, Oasis or Beyoncé or Ariana Grande or any of that level of artists said, hey, you know what? We are withdrawing our music from all existing streaming services, and we are going to help establish a new streaming service that pays artists more equitably. But you know what? No artist has ever done that. I mean, actually, let me rephrase that parenthetically. Neil Young tried to do it about 20 years ago. It didn't work because he offered a service that wasn't particularly good, but that's another story. But really, the only way this reality could ever get better is if the most powerful artist decided to do something about it.
Yeah, that probably won't happen.
And I'm a Taylor Swift fan, so I'm not going to blame Taylor Swift, but I will say this. She owns her own music. She went to great, great lengths, as you know, to own her own music. What she could have done at that point is say, I am going to start with this is the basis of this. My music is a basis of this. I'm going to start a new streaming service that pays artists equitably. She didn't, which I don't blame her for. It's extraordinarily complicated, and it probably would have cost an enormous amount of money and cost her an enormous amount of money. But the fact is, Black Keys and everyone else, this is the new reality we live in. And this is what you have to adjust to.
But here's what I was surprised by, because I think that there's good things to me and bad things about the streaming services and the way that they compensate the artists. There's a lot of access for us as fans. And then you have smaller acts that can get some attention. They can go on the road. They can tour. And this is how they're making their money, with merchandise. But Patrick Carney from the Black Keys was quoted in this piece that I shared with you that said, there's much talk now of touring becoming financially unfeasible for most bands, even at the upper levels. He says, yeah, it's getting exceedingly expensive. Ticket prices are soaring, but money's not necessarily trickling down into more profit or anything. And that sort of surprised me, because I thought that that's the way, you know, a lot of these bands are making their living these days, certainly the, you know, the 70s and 80s rock bands.
And that's correct. What he probably needs to do, and I don't know if you, ever go to any sort of club level or small venue level.
I do. I love those. That's my preferred level. My preferred concerts are at smaller clubs. Yes.
I just heard you talking about that. Yeah. That was a fascinating interview. And I don't know if you go to any smaller heavy metal shows.
I do not.
Speed metal shows or death metal shows.
No.
Those guys know how to run their merch. They have a devoted audience who buys their T-shirts, who buys vinyl that they sell only at the shows. If you ask me what Black Keys should do, they should go and study the way heavy metal bands, speed metal bands, death metal bands do it, where they have this, where they exist because of the power of their ability to sell merch at their venues, at their shows. There's a speed metal and death metal subculture, which I'm not making any judgment about it either, either musically or politically, but they know how to run their business, and they should be a model for every young band.
Yeah, that's interesting. It really is. All right, well, there were other topics that I wanted to touch on, but I do want to get a couple of things in here just personally to make a recommendation. And what's interesting is, if I were to ask you, Tim Sommer, to define a jam band, what is a jam band for the listeners who might not be familiar?
I would say it's a band that is not confined to playing 3 to 5 minute songs and who have a performance that varies. Each night's performance is different from the night before and the night after.
So Dave Matthews' band is in that group. You know, the Grateful Dead and Dead and Company, John Mayer's become a part of that. Trey Anastasio, sure. Those are jam bands. So I like jam bands every once in a while. It's not like my preferred genre, but there's a band, and I think they're from maybe Connecticut, and they're called Goose. Have you ever heard of Goose before?
I've heard of Goose, but I'll be honest and say I've never heard the music.
Okay, so they put a record out here just a couple of weeks ago, and I love John Mayer. We seem to be personal friends. So he has a really good SiriusXM station, and he exposes me to a lot of music, and it's not surprising that he would expose me to Goose, because they've warmed up for the Dead and Company, and you know John plays with Dead and Company. So here's a little sample of Goose.
Madalena, I've been looking for
Fred heard this earlier. He's like, oh, I'm going to listen to that tonight. Very, you know, good melody in that song. But then you get to a song called Royal here, and you'll hear the, you know, the guitar. You can hear these songs that probably, like to your point, they might be 3 or 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes on the record. When they play these in concert, they're probably 14 or you know, 20 minutes long. But I'm telling you, I love, love, love this new record by Goose. I keep listening to it over and over again. Then, I know you're familiar with Haim, these three young sisters from L.A. Yep. They've been around for 10 years now. They have a lot of respect in the industry. They've worked with Taylor and with some of the other big names. They're not as well-known, you know, as a lot of popular bands. But they have an album out called I Quit. And I just cried. One of the songs from that called Cry. I just love these girls so much. I remember going to see them, Tim, at the Pageant, which is one of our smaller venues here. And this is when they first broke out on their first tour. And I was literally like the creepy 50-year-old dude amongst a sea of all these young women. But I knew how damn talented these girls were, and I loved them so much. I had to go see them live. I've seen them twice. I saw them at a music festival in Vegas. But those are my two recommendations right now. The new record by Goose and the new record by Haim, and that is spelled H-A-I-M. I'm sorry, H-A-I-M.
Well, I want to say about that is it's just wonderful that people have found that Americana music, which is such a general word, but you hear Haim, and am I pronouncing that right?
Yep,
I
apologize. Yep, you are, yeah.
And you hear the sound, a sound that would have been familiar to people in the United States in the 1930s, to people in Tennessee, in Oklahoma, in Pennsylvania. And that is wonderful that that still exists. And secondarily, I want to say this about jam music, about jam band music, is very much, it requires, I had a breakthrough with the Grateful Dead a little while ago. I've never been a Grateful Dead fan.
Nor have I, really. Yeah, my wife is, but nor have I, right.
Very recently. I had a breakthrough when I realized you have to listen to the Grateful Dead the same way you listen to classical music, which is you have to abandon the idea of immediate 3-minute satisfaction. You have to let the process and the experience as a listener unwind. You have to say, I'm going to sit and allow myself to spend time with this.
I love
listen
that.
To this.
Yeah. And you know why that's so, that connects with me so much? Because that record by Goose is like that. The songs are longer, and typically I wouldn't listen to, and this is kind of sad, we always used to listen to albums from start to finish, but there are complexities to their music. There's a little jazz fusion with the drums, and I just love it. But to your point, it's a little bit more of an investment, which is worth it for sure. Tim, I got to run because we got audio cut of the day. You know we love talking music. We're going to do it again soon. You have a great Labor Day weekend.
You too.
All right, we'll see you. Hey, we're off on Monday, Sue. It's the holiday.
Love it.
How about that? Yes. And I don't know. There's something about I rather enjoy the bookending of Memorial Day and Labor Day and, you know, kind of saying farewell to summer and the pools are closing and the temperatures are getting cool and football is back and the U.S. Open's on this weekend and the Gateway Cup is in St. Louis. So there's a lot of great things. I honestly, because this puppy is so athletic, I'm looking forward to getting him out this weekend and romping around. I think I'm going to take him down to the bike races on Saturday on the hill because he's good around people and other
dogs.
So that should be fun. All right. I have this is really good. This is a good audio cut of the day, ladies and gentlemen. So let's get to it here.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So we have a guy from the CDC who has resigned, and his name is Dr. Dimitri Daskoskalis or something like that. It really doesn't matter. But he wrote a letter saying, I am writing to formally resign from my position as director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. He said it's because of Trump trying to erase transgender populations. For decades, he says, I've been the trusted voice for the LGBTQ community when it comes to critical health topics. I must also cite the recklessness of the administration in their efforts to erase transgender populations, cease critical domestic and international HIV programming, and will terminate key research to support equity as part of my decision. And he loves to use the word pregnant people. He doesn't back down from it. Oh, and he has pronouns, of course. Mm-hmm. So my position is good freaking riddance.
I find it outrageous that this administration is trying to erase transgender people. I very specifically used the term pregnant people and very specifically added my pronouns at the end of my resignation letter to make the point that I am defying this terrible strategy at trying to erase people and not allowing them to express their identities. So I accept the note from the press secretary and counter that with, I don't care.
Well, guess what? Here's the note here.
I find it outrageous.
Well, that was him. Hold on. Here's Carolyn.
I understand there were a few other individuals who resigned after the firing of Ms. Monterez. One of those individuals wrote in his departure statement that he identifies pregnant women as pregnant people. So that's not someone who we want in this administration anyway. So if people are not aligned with the president's vision and the secretary's vision to make our country healthy again, then we will gladly show them the door.
Yeah, congratulations to this dude, because there's probably 0.001% of the population that thinks it's appropriate to use the word pregnant people. And the pronoun stuff is ridiculous. I even highlighted, we got people that work in this company, in this building, and I see the they, them, and he, you know, him, and give me a break. We're tired of it. It shouldn't be that hard, and I love it. I think no one who uses the word pregnant people should work for the CDC on our taxpayer dime. How about that? Well, we'll simplify it from that perspective, because that guy is an embarrassment, and I would say good riddance. Okay, I don't often get to do this, because they stole my bumper music away from me. But because I love this band Goose so much, I'm going to go out with music before your traffic. How does that sound,
Steve
Thomas?
Nice.
Enjoy your weekend.
You too.
All right, we'll see you Tuesday at 3. Wake up, stay.